Alright, creatures of the night, welcome to episode 118 of Talking Taker, our encyclopedic exploration digging up the career of the greatest professional wrestling character of all time. My name is Alex Dorio, and I want to thank you for joining us for yet another round of Dead Man Talking. And I am joined, as always, by my tag team partner, my fellow creature of the night, the world's biggest Shinedown fan, the sick freak himself, Mr. Travis White. Travis, man, you've been down for the count for the past few days for a shoot ski, man. How you feeling?
Man, I apparently signed up for a impromptu handicap match last week.
Oh, yeah?
About Thursday last week, yeah, I got signed up and entered a handicap match with the flu and walking pneumonia, 2-on-1. And I tell you what, man, it was an Iron Man match, been going on all weekend, and I was down a little bit and up a little bit, but I think I'm going to kick out this time and come out on top here. So hopefully I'm on the mend, hopefully I can get back to work. Hope by the time this podcast drops, I'll be back to work for a couple of days, I hope. So we'll see. But yeah, I've been under the weather, whew, and then trying to get through some great Khali matches too, which not made it any better. So
it doesn't make things better, but glad to have you back. And in the words of the man we're going to talk about tonight, the great Khali.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. Couldn't say it better myself.
Folks, bad news.
There's
some gumballs in your mouth? We are talking about the great Khali. That is the bad news tonight. The good news, we're going to try to make it as fun as we possibly can here. Judgment Day 2006, one of the darkest moments in The Undertaker's timeline as we go through it chronologically, one pay-per-view match at a time. It means we can't skip this, and I'm sure The Undertaker wishes he could have skipped stepping into the ring with this man. Maybe the world's most dangerous man, as we'll talk about here. Screw Ken Shamrock, Great Khali might be the world's most dangerous man.
Yeah, just from sheer being a greenhorn, you know, he's just awful. I just don't get it. I didn't get it then, I don't get it now. It's just terrible from top to bottom. There's no redeeming qualities in this entire thing. So, but we're going to break it down here, I guess.
Yes, we are. It's going to get one of the biggest pushes you'll ever see coming here right off the bat. As we take you back to the SmackDown after WrestleMania, we left off with The Undertaker burying Mark Henry, putting him in a casket, sending him away. And we're going to take you to SmackDown on April 7th, 2006. And the guy that The Undertaker just buried is going to get right back up and face him yet again.
Yeah, exactly. He just beat him on Sunday, and now they're here again. And Mark Henry comes out with his terrible music, which that'll change here in the near future. We're going to get that 3-6 Mafia that you were talking about. So I didn't realize it happened so quick. Like, it was back in 06 when it happened. I had no idea. I thought it was 2011. Shows how much I pay attention to Mark Henry over that time period. So,
well, dude, his music is the opposite of some of the music we've talked about on this show. Like,
oh yeah,
you know how we complain when the music gets edited for Highway to Hell and Voodoo Child and everything. I wish they would go back and edit this, whatever this music is, and put his 3-6 Mafia in there.
Yeah,
like, don't leave this music on there anymore.
I know, it's so bad, man. Well, we're told we're going to get a rematch tonight, although without a casket, so it's just a partial rematch. But before the match, Mark Henry comes out and gives this ridiculous promo about, you know, I'm never going to be the same.
My lungs will never be the same. I mean, you look at me. I'm wide. I'm big. I shouldn't be confined to small places. But when you close me in that airtight coffin and I struggle to receive my last breath, I passed out. And I almost passed on.
says he got some fresh breath, fresh air in his lungs, and he had an epiphany, and he saw Taker's future, and he promises he'll never be the same after tonight. So that was a lot of stuff that he had while he was sitting there in that gasket. Yeah. So I guess they're trying to make a story out of something here to just give a rematch, you know. So is this Taker's first match on SmackDown in a while?
Yeah, you know, he didn't do... I guess it was since he beat... Or since he faced Kurt Angle right after No Way Out. So
yeah,
it's been a few weeks since before Mania.
Yeah, and this match is what it is, you know. It's pretty short, and it gets interrupted because Daivari, who we know and recognize, comes out, and he's got this man, this giant specimen of a man who none of us in America have any idea who he is. If we were from India, we'd probably known who he is. We'll get to that in just a minute here, but commentary does point out that this is Mark Henry's manager, Daivari, which I do appreciate that. They didn't forget that little bit of continuity there, but this big man gets in the ring and goes basically nose-to-nose with The Undertaker, and commentary is just putting over the size of this guy. They can't believe how big he is, and Undertaker starts punching him, and guy no-sells it, and this guy, who we come to know as the Great Khali, winds up just chopping Undertaker on the head, and he falls down. And I hated that move in the first place, and we'll get to that as we continue just talk here. And then Taker sits up, and then Khali goes over and just rips the turnbuckle like into a million pieces, like he's George Steele or something, I don't know. And rams Taker's head into it, and then headbutts Taker from behind, and then Taker's kind of getting up like a puzzled look on his face. So he's kind of like taking quite a beat at this point.
Right.
And then Khali kicks him in the head and stands over him and kind of puts his hands up in the air and is like, "Bruh!" And then Daivari's standing there, you know, clapping, applauding, and the commentary team says they've never seen anyone manhandle The Undertaker like this, which is a comment they said about 3 weeks ago in the build-up to Mark Henry versus Undertaker at WrestleMania. So, and also that build-up before with Heidenreich, and the build-up before that with... You just insert
whoever.
How many
episodes have we had? 118?
Yeah,
118 times.
Yeah, exactly. But announcers are wondering, you know, is this what Mark Henry meant by Undertaker would never be the same again? Because I know I was never the same again after I saw this. So, this man...
No one would ever be the same when the Great Khali came walking, stomping,
limping, dragging
his legs down to the ring, man. But, you know, this was 2006, so, you know, he was younger, more limber, if you can believe that, than he would go on to be. You know, this is him at his best shape here, and I will say it is quite the visual, man.
It's visually impressive.
He is an
enormous
specimen.
Yeah, he's huge. I mean, he's legitimately 7'3" or something.
Yeah.
And that's not, you know, that's not wrestling putting on the, you know, fudge in the numbers. That's like legit. He's huge.
And you could tell why Vince saw dollar signs in him right here. And as you said, you know, he was pretty much unknown to American audiences at this time. This guy, Daleep Singh, is his shoot name, but of course we would know him as the Great Khali. He was actually, I don't know, I didn't even realize this, man, until I was doing some research, but he was actually signed to WCW back in the day. Back in the year 2000, dying days of WCW, he had a contract with them. So he was in the wrestling business for a few years before he got to WWE. He went and worked in Japan for a little while with a former WWE guy.
Who did he work?
He worked with Giant Singh, who used to be in the Oddities. They were a tag team in, like, New Japan Tag Team League.
Oh, my word. And that was back when New Japan wasn't the New Japan of today.
Right.
Like,
it's kind of a freak show.
Or of 1994. This was the New Japan of 2006, which nobody cared about. So...
But we did know him. I mean, American audiences would know him best. And I think we all got familiar with him, of course, from The Longest Yard. That is where everyone got
right.
their first sights on this guy, which came out a year beforehand. That's kind of where I always heard WWE got their eyes on him, was from that movie.
Me too.
But I guess they knew him somewhat from the business, you know, a little bit just from, you know, being involved in the business since before that.
I'd always assumed it was from that movie, too, because you got what? You got Stone Cold, you got Goldberg, Nash, anybody else? They're all in there, and this giant guy's in there. So I just assumed they found him from that. You know, like, I don't know, Austin put in a good word for him or something, or Nash did. Maybe Nash did as a rib. He's like, hey, you got this guy. Yeah.
I was about to say, if Stone Cold put in a good word for him, I can't respect Stone Cold anymore, man.
I bet Nash did it as a joke. just to entertain himself.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, he's coming into the business, he's coming into the ring, but honestly, he should have stayed in the movies, in my opinion, because... Do you remember this, Travis, that he killed a guy in the ring for a shoot, like in developmental?
What?
He, like in 2004, the story is he got the guy up over his head for his little tree slam, like double choke slam down to the ground, and the guy got a massive concussion from it. This wasn't WWE developmental, I don't think.
Okay.
This was like in all APW in California or something like that. And the trainers, like, made the guy keep competing, even though he said, like, he's really hurt. But they made him keep training, and he died, like, 48 hours later.
Wow.
So, like, you know, from injuries stemmed from in the ring from Great Khali, he literally killed a guy. And so, now
wow.
He's getting in the ring with The Undertaker.
Yeah, your biggest commodity at this point, because Rock and Austin are gone. So, yeah, jeez. I had never heard that. That's terrible. Hey, man, show must go on, right? same company that, you know, kept rolling after Owen Hart died.
There you
in
go.
There, in the ring.
What did Nathan Jones go to prison for? Didn't he, like, rob a convenience store or something?
He robbed us from lots of enjoyment watching wrestling. Yeah. No, yeah, he did something, like some kind of felony. It's like a felony, though, like in Australia.
Right. Yeah.
Whatever it was. So.
And now we've got the Great Khali murdering people, but
yeah,
that's sort of his backstory and where he's coming from. But he's jumping right in to the main event here on SmackDown. Giant feud here with The Undertaker, pushed to the moon. SmackDown, April 14th, 2006. Tony Chimmel asked the crowd to give a warm Green Bay welcome as manager extraordinaire Daivari presents the Great Khali.
I do love that touch.
What an introduction.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you can fill in the blanks here with The Undertaker's story. He's going to be disappearing for a few weeks. Got to take that WrestleMania PTO. And the announcers are going to talk about how his spirit has been broken by the Great Khali. He's not here tonight. The Undertaker is not. And Daivari, he's given us our first big hype for the Great Khali, saying... The Undertaker, that phenom is no more. Now we have a new phenom. He's 7 feet tall, 420 pounds. He's walked through the Punjab jungles, unafraid of pythons and white Bengal tigers. He's stared into the abyss, and the earth has trembled at his gaze. Just going into full hype,
that's
man.
Hulk Hogan, man. Stuff
oh,
right
yeah.
there.
And Khali gets on the mic after that, and... just garbles out something.
You remember me last time? I am now here. You are here.
Man, I don't know if it was English, I don't know if it was Punjab, I don't know if it was alien, but...
No, it was, whoever gave him the microphone was like, they were very ill-informed as to like, this guy should not be given a microphone on television. This is pre-taped, it's on SmackDown. They could have edited this off.
I wish they would have. I think Kevin Nash ripped him about his promo abilities, too.
Yeah. I mean, literally, he gets the mic and is just like, rrr, rrr, rrr. It's terrible.
It's it is something to behold, man. And yeah, that's our first real introduction to who the Great Khali is.
He'd be holding something in his mouth like marbles or something, dude. I don't know what's going on. Yeah, it reminded me of Smells Like Nirvana. you know, Weird Al just singing with the marbles in his mouth. It's just, that's exactly what it reminded me of. Like, it's terrible.
I'd love to see anybody try to translate any of this into any language.
Yeah, any human language it's ever been uttered before. Because it's whatever he says is not. So, and that got me thinking, though, you know, like, is this feud really with Kali or is it with Daivari? Because Daivari has feuded with Undertaker, with Muhammad Hassan, with Mark Henry, and now he's got a new protege, you know what I'm saying? Which also got me thinking, like, Taker, some of his biggest feuds have all been with managers, like Paul Heyman, IRS, or no, not IRS, but Ted DiBiase. Like, it really got me thinking, like,
Paul Bearer. Paul Bearer.
Judging by the history we've gone through, like, it's really funny how he feuds with these managers that have this new monster of the week every time, you know? So, or monster of the 6 months or whatever. So, that's kind of, I wouldn't think of Daivari being one, but he is.
Yeah, underrated, low key. Yeah. You go back to what this feud is. I mean, this is 1993 all over again with John Gonzalez and Harvey Whippleman. He had his monsters of the week going out there with Kamala and Mr. Hughes and all that. So, this is literally cut and paste that right there.
Yeah, except for worse. Somehow, who knew it could get worse than that?
Wow, that's going to be our poll question this week: Giant Gonzalez or Great Khali? Man,
I don't know. A tough time judging that one. Well, that brings us to the next SmackDown on April 21st, 06, and we're gonna, you know, anytime you debut on SmackDown, it's always good to get a great win over the number one announcer. Funaki's interviewed by future Miss Bobby Lashley backstage and talks about his match, and they keep calling him the Great Khali, like he's a, you know, a dog or something.
The Great Khali.
Crystal here with Funaki. Funaki, tonight you have the daunting task of going up against the 7'3", 420-pound giant named the Great Khali in his debut match. I mean, have you ever seen anyone anywhere the size of the Great Khali?
Yeah, like glassy or something. It's just the Great Khali. It's like they're putting the wrong emphasis and the wrong syllable back there. But anyway, Daivari and Khali walk up, and it is impressive, though, to see how big, you know, the Great Khali is standing there next to little old Funaki. So it's kind of funny. But then he grabs the microphone and just... I don't know what happens.
Dude.
It's like some beast from Star Wars
What if they brought Khali back as new SmackDown number one announcer?
I would be fine with that now.
SmackDown number one.
Oh, man. That'd be terrifying. But it'd be great. Like, I really am not trying to be insensitive or anything, but, like, I literally can't understand a word he says.
This has nothing to do with him being Punjab. Just him with his whatever acromegaly.
Yeah.
I guess you shouldn't make fun of that either, but whatever, man.
Yeah, I don't know how to get out of this safely, but yeah, I'm not trying to.
I'd make fun of a white guy if he talked like that.
Oh, yeah, I don't care who you are. So it's just, but anyway, we get a recap of that debut, and then the match is pretty much what you think it is. He chops Funaki, kicks him, does the little double choke lift thing, and then pins him with one foot on his chest, which it takes less than a minute to do all of that. And commentary's putting him over, but do you think he pinned him with a foot on his chest because it was impressive or because he can't bend down?
Bingo.
Okay. just thinking.
Dude, he does not take a bump here, man. Spoiler alert, like, for months. He doesn't leave his feet. He doesn't leave the ground. He doesn't get on his back. And there's a reason for that.
Yeah. He can't.
He can't.
He can't get back up. I'd be stuck.
And, you know, that's the deal here, man. Like, the announcers on this episode of SmackDown, they compare him, say he's reminiscent of Andre the Giant. And that's obviously what Vince wants here. That's what Vince sees. That's what he's been seeing, trying to find for 30 years is another Andre the Giant.
Well, since he brought Taker in,
Taker, honestly, is the closest they've ever had to another Andre the Giant. Maybe Taker or Brock Lesnar, even, I think, is kind of in that same, you know, attraction level of Andre the Giant. And it's not because of their size. It's because of their presence and their aura.
Yeah.
And that's the problem here is they see the size of Great Khali and it is like awe-inspiring, but he just doesn't have it, man. We've talked to like so many guys on this show just don't have that aura. They don't have that presence. They don't have that charisma, that character. Even
the English language.
The English language just... He just grunts and yells. And Andre, he could be a babyface. He could be a heel.
Yeah.
Like, his heel work against Hulk Hogan, his character work is awesome. Like, even when, like, he doesn't speak English great. He didn't speak it great either, but you could...
Right.
You know, like, the big character differences Andre made when he turned heel were so, you know, huge. And Great Khali couldn't pull anything close to that off.
No. Not even remotely close. No. So,
and
too much too soon.
It is. It is too much too soon. As we keep going here, SmackDown, April 28th, 2006. It's in the UK. As if you can't tell.
Well, how could you tell?
Oh, there's a phone booth on the stage and a double decker bus, and they
didn't have those on the most recent episodes of Raw.
No, I think they finally retired those. It's sad.
Too insensitive and too not PC. I guess.
So it's like if they went to New York and they just had like a hot dog stand out there and a Statue of Liberty in the entryway.
I'd do Raw in Georgia and have like a hay bale or something, you know, like
Confederate flag hanging.
Yeah. Like, okay. Why do they always do that in the UK?
I don't know.
You get it.
Well, Crystal Marshall, future Miss Bobby Lashley, as we've said on here. She brings Great Khali out for an interview in the ring, and he just, again...
First mistake.
He does tower over her, man. He's like two of her.
Oh, yeah.
And Daivari gets on the mic, tells us the rumors are fact.
I'm sure many of you have already heard the rumors. Well, I am here to state that it is a fact. Not only has the Great Khali beat down The Undertaker, but he has broken and stole his spirit. 4 years people have stepped up to The Undertaker. For years people have tried to stop him, but he has risen from the ashes like a phoenix and destroyed all of his enemies. Until now.
And for years we've had all these guys who had to use tricks out of their bag and mind games to defeat Undertaker, but Khali didn't need any tricks, no weapons to annihilate Undertaker, just his hands. And the Undertaker trembled in fear at the Great Khali, and Khali grabs the mic and quote-unquote speaks yet again. And Crystal does what anyone would do in this situation. She runs away when she hears whatever he's yelling at her.
Yeah. I mean, literally the only thing I understood at the end was he goes, Great Khali. Like, he tried to say his own name, but he can't even say his own name. Like, in English. It's terrible. It's brutal, it man. I got nothing else to say. It's just, it's awful. But... that leads to Cinco de Mayo. Maybe something good will happen this week on May 5th. Fingers crossed. And, well, Daivari's on the phone backstage, and Teddy Long runs into him, and, you know, he's looking for Khali, and somehow Khali sneaks up on him. And he tells him that he's been challenged to a match at Judgment Day by The Undertaker. So, you know, Teddy's always... He always yields to the you know whatever Undertaker wants to do. Dude. So
Taker slid into Teddy's DMs like, give me a match with Khali.
Exactly.
Judgment Day.
Exactly. And then, but like as soon as Teddy,
Taker sliding into Teddy Long's DMs whenever he wants a match.
Oh, yeah.
Teddy gets all excited.
That's gotta be it. It's got to be like a gift or something. We got to see that somehow. So.
Teddy's phone has Undertaker in there with like hearts.
Oh man. But so, every time Teddy gets a DM from him, he starts screaming. But speaking of screaming, is when Khali hears this news that he's going to be in this match.
Mr. Khali, the news that I have is that you have been challenged to a match at Judgment Day. Now, the man that has challenged you to this match is The Undertaker.
Actually scared me. I watched it the other day. Like, I jumped because of how, like, frightening this loud noise was. I had to not see this coming because I, for your honesty, I refused to watch this crap back then because it was terrible. But, you know, Teddy's got a contract that's already signed by Undertaker, so, you know, doesn't matter. He's not coming to work. He still signs his stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, and Khali signs it and just screams, Undertaker! It's so bad, man. It's so awful.
Are you doing Great Khali or Schwarzenegger?
Get to the chopper.
Undertaker.
Yeah, might as well.
I'd rather bring me the Taker.
I was with Schwarzenegger in this match than Great Khali.
Dude, Taker versus Schwarzenegger? Sign
Dude,
me up.
Terminator
man.
Versus Undertaker? That'd be awesome.
WrestleMania 36.
Let's go to the Saudi Arabia.
Expendables 4 with the Undertaker in there.
I mean, what's Schwarzenegger doing nowadays? Nothing. So.
Yeah.
He's out of politics.
Yeah, he needs another some money. Bad Terminator movie. That's what he's doing.
Dude, that movie made like $11 that weekend. Oh, man. And they even had the original cast.
I know,
like,
man.
With Linda Hamilton. It made like $6.
No.
That's terrible.
Yeah, they haven't been a good one since 1992. It hasn't been a good Terminator movie.
I tried to like Salvation a lot because I love Christian Bale, but it wasn't great, you know? And I never saw Genesis. I never saw Terminator 3.
I didn't see Genesis. I saw Terminator 3. I thought it was okay. And then I tried to watch the Sarah Connor Chronicles TV show.
I did watch part of that.
And it was like, it made no sense. And
yeah.
I was like, all right, I'll just forget about that. And then I tried to watch the Christian Bale. Was that Salvation?
Yeah.
It was okay, too. It was just like...
Yeah.
I just didn't click the same way, and then I didn't watch Genesis.
Well, do you hear what happens
either.
At the beginning of this one?
No.
Do you want me to spoil it for you?
No, don't spoil it for
okay.
our listeners.
Well, it'll ruin anything about it, so... Anyway, I accidentally read a review that was full of spoilers. But anyway, let's spoil this.
You can tell me off
you.
Air.
I will. We get Super Crazy versus Nunzio versus Kid Cash, which is like an ECW mid-card
oh,
night.
Yeah.
So,
ECW yeah. TNN. Not the new ECW, which we're
going to get to
very soon.
Not the one that's coming making its debut in 2 months, but the one that died 5.5 years ago. So, even Big Vito comes out, which is a real ECW reunion with these four guys. So, but before this match can even get close to anything good, Great Khali comes out to soil it. He chops Vito, throws Kid Cash into the cameraman, takes out Super Crazy, and then an impressive move, presses Nunzio over his head and throws him all the way over the top rope to the floor, which, I mean, if a 7'2" guy's holding you over his head, you're probably, 10 feet in the air, plus the ring? Like, how tall is the ring apron? 3 feet? 3.5 feet?
Easily,
I mean,
yeah.
This guy's is at least 13, 14 feet in the air, and he hits the ground, and he weighs like 148 pounds, so.
He's also being thrown by someone who killed somebody.
Yeah, that's also true. Well, speaking of that, Michael Cole's like, I wonder if Undertaker made a mistake challenging Khali to a match of Judgment Day. And I think he did, because you may not walk out of it. So, because this guy is a clown in the ring, man. Like, not a good one, like Doink either. Like, a horrifying clown of a person. So,
well, think about all that. Think about all we've said about the Great Khali. Think about his one match that he's had so far here on TV with Funaki. And take that to the next week on SmackDown, May 12th, 2006. The Great Khali is going to face World Heavyweight Champion Rey Mysterio in the main event of this show. Rey's,
I cannot believe it.
Yeah. Shot right to the top here. And this is like, you know, this is Vince's thing again here. You got the smallest guy and the biggest guy against each other. Rey literally comes up to like Khali's belly button here, man. And Vince is loving that.
Oh, yeah, it's a good visual. for sure.
It is, except that Ray's supposed to be the world champion, right, here, man. He's feuding with JBL during this time, who's on commentary in full JBL mode, man.
Yes.
Like, I can't even say some of the stuff that he's saying.
Can't repeat things he says. Yeah.
Certainly not. And Kali just tosses around the world heavyweight champion, Rey Mysterio, like he's Luther Reigns, like he's a jobber.
Mm-hmm.
And hits the tree slam on him, pins the world heavyweight champion with one foot on him, completely clean, in like 3 minutes, in a non-title match where the world heavyweight champion got zero offense in. Like, un-freaking believable.
That'd be like, okay, next week on Raw, the Yeti, Ron Reese, comes out.
He's back, man. He's a StarCast.
He was. And he just tosses around Seth Rollins like this and beats him clean in 3 minutes and puts his foot on his chest. Like, I don't think Rollins is not the champion, but Brock Lesnar is, but he's not ever there. So, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, that's what it would be like. It's just terrible.
And that's why, you know, everybody hated this back then. You know, especially if you were a fan of Rey Mysterio, and he just won the world title a few weeks ago, and he's just treated like a joke here.
His whole title run is a joke, and it really highlighted it, going back and watching it in detail, like, as I'm watching these episodes of SmackDown, and I've already gotten a little bit into next week's stuff, too. Like, it is just... I cannot believe how big a joke his title reign was, man. I forgot how awful it was. I mean, he is treated like a complete waste of existence.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it's one thing to have an underdog, but it's another thing,
right,
to pin your world champion with somebody who's had one match in 3 minutes with one foot on top of them.
Like, right.
It is a huge, huge difference between that. But, you know, Rey Mysterio, he went on to be okay, and another guy who went on to have a pretty okay career is a guy who made a SmackDown debut on this episode of SmackDown. We kind of note these weird one-off appearances when we notice them, but none other than the King of Sleaze, or the King of Dong style, not the King of Gong style, the other one, Joey Ryan.
Yeah.
Joey Ryan is on this episode of SmackDown, looking real young and real skinny, losing to Simon Dean's tag team, the Gemini. And his career turned out okay. Not those guys,
he'll be all right. You could tell it's him, like, when they say, like, because I said Joey Ryan, I was like, wait a minute, is that him? Like, cause that's a pretty simple name to put together, you know?
Yeah.
But I was like, nope, that's him. It was kind of funny to watch. We're going to see some more of that over the next couple episodes of Talking Taker here. Just some randos that are just going to show up on SmackDown and stuff. It's kind of neat. But, dude, I did not remember these Gemini jabrones at all. I would not have picked them out of... I mean, I thought they were from the 80s. Like, just some jabrones that were in, like, the Royal Rumble.
Right.
Just for, like, extra, like, you know, beef to get in the ring to get thrown out by Andre or something, you know? It's just... They were terrible.
I mean, and they were getting a push, man. They got action figures. They were, like, super peg warmers, man. I remember them being on the shelves for months after this. But...
That's, like, not even the worst of SmackDown. So,
dude, SmackDown sucks during this time, man.
Yeah.
Like, we've covered some rough patches, but this is... this is like the crew that's getting pushed on SmackDown. The Gemini, Pirate Paul Burchill, Tatanka in 2006,
right.
Heel Road Warrior Animal in his Leather Daddy gear, Big Vito in a dress. Like, this is the majority of the SmackDown roster,
right,
that are all getting pushed during this time. It's
out of all those you just said, you know which one I would have taken? Paul Burchill, because he had a character. That's the one I would take from all those you just said. Every other one of those, I'm like, no, Road Warrior Animal, see you later. Like, last time I thought you were relevant was 2001 WCW. Tatanka, same thing. Like, seriously, were they just trying to fill the ring with, like, anybody looking for a payday?
Yes.
And then, I don't get it, dude. They had no developmental or anything? I don't understand. So.
And then, Great Khali squashing Rey Mysterio. I mean,
right,
the whole show is just painful to sit through.
Yeah, it's terrible. Well, that's going to bring us to the next week of SmackDown, and that's SmackDown. This is the go-home show for Judgment Day, and this is on May 19th, 2006.
What? What date?
May 19th.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
The May 19th.
Yeah, this is the May 19th. And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, where have you been? Because we will get to that in just a second. You hold on to your seats there. So we see a sign that says, you know, Tatanka is going to return next week. And after that, we see Daivari's coming to the ring. And he says that everyone knows what Taker's accomplished. And he's an unstoppable force, yada, yada, yada. Until now, that is. He says, you know, he tells Taker to pay attention to what he's about to see. And this is why he's afraid of the Great Khali. And then we see a neat little highlight video of Taker's dominance over the years, which was kind of cool to see. But of course, it leads up until Great Khali's attack, where he hits him with his hand and then kicks him in the head and puts him out. And then that brings out Khali, who's going to, again, just butcher the English language into a microphone once again. And Khali says something, and I just can't understand what it is. But it ends with...
I think he said, rest in peace. He was speaking in his native tongue, Indy, before that. Oh, that's what that is. Yeah, rest in peace. I think that's what he said.
And Taz is like, oh, rest in peace. Like, Taz is like, oh, he said it right there, ladies and gentlemen, rest in peace. So, apparently he was trying to say the words rest in peace. He can't get three single syllable words out of his mouth. But I do appreciate Taz for clarifying that. But again, this is May 19th, and so... If you don't know what May 19th is, it is a really famous day in WWE history because this was the opening night for See No Evil.
The Undertaker's brother, Kane.
Yeah.
Exactly. Starring in the first ever WWE Films production.
Well, was this their first ever one?
This was the first one.
Yeah. Oh, Marine wasn't... Oh, because this was a film. This was the one that's out in...
Yeah, I mean, Marine came out in theaters too, but See No Evil was the premiere.
Oh, okay. First one. Awesome. Yeah, this was big news, man. And yeah, Taker's brother, Kane, in it. So, and yeah, they had this whole thing with, remember, was that Luke Gallows with fake Kane over on Raw?
Yep.
And, oh, man, I saw highlights of that the other day. It was pretty funny. But, yeah, speaking of that, Kane actually is going to show up on this episode of SmackDown and decimate the world champion Rey Mysterio. Again.
Because he said the words, May 19th.
He did. So, but man, you and I saw this movie in theater. I don't know if it was open at night, but it was probably opening night.
I think it was that weekend.
I think it was that Sunday, though, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Me, you, and Richard, our pal, who's about the size of the Great Khali.
I think we thought it wouldn't be in theaters for more than a week, so we were like, yeah. I guess we better go this week.
Yeah, we're ready to see it now. But yeah, me, you, and Richard went and saw it, and you know what, man? I dug it.
So, I had fun watching it, man. It's so bad it's good kind
exactly.
of flicks. And, bought the DVD for it, pre-ordered it.
Oh, without question.
Because, you know, we were WWE hardcore back then, man. You had to go support it, and it was just kind of hilarious to think, okay, Kane is going to be a horror movie villain. That's like too perfect, man.
It's too on the nose.
Yeah, man. It is. But, you know, can you imagine? Why did we never get an Undertaker movie?
I know. Why would they choose Kane instead of Undertaker? Like, they made a movie about Taker's character.
I feel like if See No Evil had been a bigger hit, like that could have been like the second or third one in the trilogy, as the Undertaker shows up and he's like the new bad guy in there, like a Freddy versus Jason kind of situation.
Yeah, that'd have been fun.
It would have been fun, man. But yeah, hit us up. Let us know if you saw See No Evil out in the theaters during this time. If you were camped out opening weekend, didn't do too much at the box office that opening weekend.
Did better than the new Terminator did.
Well, that made $4.6 million that opening weekend. Grossed $15 million overall at the U.S. box office. So I think Terminator made a little more than that, but not too much. It did get a direct-to-DVD sequel, like 7 years later, which I have not seen.
Oh, man. Only 7 years later? Dang. Yeah, I'm never going to watch that.
Maybe we should. That could be like a special edition of the show.
Maybe.
It's still got Kane in it, though.
Oh, he's still...
He's still the bad
Jacob
guy. Still
Jacob Goodnight?
Jacob Goodnight, that's right.
There you go. I'll never forget that name.
Well, man, Travis, we've talked about...
I defeated him.
You did defeat him. Yeah. In one of our wrestling videos.
Yeah.
We've talked about a lot of crap on this episode and a lot of negative stuff and... Before we get to this pay-per-view, before we go really down into the depths, let's talk about another thing we were doing this time besides seeing wrestling movies in the theater. We've kind of alluded to it in the past, but during this point in time in our lives, Travis, I don't remember the exact date or week or month, but sometime spring 2006, this is when you and I took our very brief four-way along with our friend Josh Gibbs, the Gibzilla, over to wrestling school and had a few lessons, took a few bumps, and ran the ropes, man.
We did. Yeah, it was sometime, I can't remember if it was April, May, June, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's around this time, and it's more entertaining to talk about than what we're about to talk about. So, yeah. But, yeah, man, we went to wrestling school. So, and I say school. Use that term a little loosely, but we did have to sign a piece of paperwork that said that we wouldn't sue the place if we died, basically. So I don't think my parents had to sign off on it, but we did. But anyway,
we probably should have
had a lawyer look at it.
I didn't read it, but I just signed it. I didn't care.
No, really? Oh, okay, I did read it, so it was kind of sketchy. But anyway, yeah, we went. Yeah. So we were in this, what was it called? Flatline Championship Wrestling?
FCW, yeah. Flatline Championship Wrestling in Harlem, Georgia.
Where, you say? Oh, Harlem. Exactly. Yeah, it was...
Mean Streets of Harlem.
Yeah, exactly. Mean Streets of Harlem. But yeah, it's this little country town, you know, in our county, but really a country, rural town. And we went out there and we were... training to wrestle with these dudes, and being that it was springtime and I have allergies in springtime with asthma, it was pretty terrible for me. But
because this was backyard wrestling.
I mean,
it was out in the backyard.
We were not in
a gymnasium or a building or anything. It was outdoors when we went to this, and they
weren't
had a ring.
Yeah, we weren't like a VFW or anything like that. No. We were outside in a homemade ring that really hurts.
Oh.
Man. Oh, yeah. Those ropes hurt. The ring hurt. Those bumps hurt. It was terrible. We went and ate it. Was it the first time we went and ate a Waffle House afterward? And we were just like completely shook up about how much pain we were in. So.
Yeah, like, you know, I remember we did the first night of training out there and took bumps for like 2 hours, just did little drills and ran the ropes. And we did a lot that first night.
I feel like
we did hip tosses and body slams.
We learned sequences like one and two or whatever, like tackle drop down.
Yeah, that was in either. I mean, we went maybe four or five times to different trainings. Yeah. We did the sequences either that first night or that second night. I remember doing front bumps and back bumps and running the ropes and hip tosses and body slams and all that, drills. But yeah, we went to Waffle House, me and you, and I mean, I just remember being on a high from doing all that, because it hurt, but I loved it. But it was the next morning. The next morning when I woke up and had to go to, we were at college at the time, and I almost didn't get out of bed that next morning. That next morning was the most I've ever been in pain in my life to this day, trying to get out of bed that next morning. That's when I felt it.
Yeah, it was rotten. I was walking like I was the Great Khali, man. It was terrible.
yeah, I felt terrible. I had a history of back issues at the time anyway, and that did not help. It only accentuated them. And my elbows hurt. I remember scraping them up on the mat.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. I mean, all the stuff. Yeah, like you said, it was such a
place, man.
Such a like a high though, like just from the adrenaline rush from being in there and doing what we love, and it was really a lot of fun. But
do you remember going to buy like knee pads and elbow pads that weekend?
Because
it was
we did.
Yeah, gotta have those.
Yeah, we went and we got all that, and we got tape and all that kind of stuff too. But yeah, I was like, oh, gotta have elbow and knee pads because this hurts like crap. So yeah, we did, man. And when was it we had our first match? It was second or third week we were there. We actually had to put a match together.
We did. Yeah. I mean, this was so, I mean, like our friend Josh, he knew these guys, and they were, you know, they ran shows up until a few years ago, man. They had some shows, and they would bring in like Chris Hamrick from ECW.
Yeah,
and,
he was there.
You know, just random guys.
Chris Hamrick from ECW.
It doesn't get more random than that. But they, you know, they were legit-ish. But
yeah,
this whatever training we did was this wasn't the Performance Center, man. And they like blew through stuff with us. And
definitely with me. I got shot right to the top. Do you remember that match?
I do, yeah. They loved you, man.
Holy crap.
You were doing, you were always the more athletic of the two of us. You could do head scissors and Hurricane Ranas and all that sort of stuff right out the gate. I was more of a Jerry Lawler style. I was more of a character.
I may have been more, if we were the Hardy Boys, you'd be Matt. You're more creative.
That's right.
Better on the mic. Whereas I'm Jeff, I'm more flashier and can do more of the whatever, but you know, yeah.
We wanted to be a tag team with a faction with our buddy Josh.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'd all play those different. He was the giant, he was the power, you were the agility, and I would be the brains.
Exactly. Like we're like the New Day. We didn't even know it though. Pre New Day. you're like Woods, I was like Kofi, and Gibbs was like E.
Yeah,
man. That's crazy to think about. But anyway, yeah, so I got shot to the top in this match with the two big guys that run the whole school, and they're like, we want you, and it, like, was it a tag? I don't remember if it was a tag team match.
It was tag team.
It was.
I think it was you and Josh.
They were probably like 6'2", 3", 250-pound dudes that I was in the ring with, and they were just not taking it easy on me, but they liked the way I, like I said, I was Jeff Hardy, you know, a 1994 Jeff Hardy. To their Scott Hall, you know? So, yeah, they're throwing me around like a rag doll, and I did a good job selling, I think, but I don't think I was selling. I was actually in pain. So, yeah. But I felt like I was in the ring with a great Khali, honestly.
Right. Well, we learned more moves than he ever did, I feel like, in just our
five or
6 weeks of doing it, man. And, you know, we had characters all picked out. We were going to be the unexpected, and our catchphrase was
respect the unexpected.
That's right. And you were Sick Freak, and I was Roy. Sick Freak and Roy, and
yes,
Josh was gonna be the roast beast.
The New Day. It's so good.
We had went and, you know, picked out our gear and all that, but you know, it fizzled out, man. It was a bit of a drive to get out there for these practices, and we were in school trying to actually get degrees and stuff, and you know, for various reasons we just ended up not pursuing it anymore. Just, you know, it wasn't quite legit enough, I guess, where we felt like we were really gonna stick with it or get anything out of it, I guess.
And there was just other things in our lives that were more important at the time too. Just we just couldn't devote 100%, and I don't want to do anything in my life I can't give 100%, so I couldn't give 100% to that, and probably wasn't going to go very far with it anyways, just based on the company it was. So, but it was fun while it lasted.
It was, man.
And I can always use it on Two Truths and a Lie, you know, when you do that like icebreaker type game with people.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I was a backyard wrestler.
I do regret it every now and then, man. Probably the biggest regret of my life. Didn't keep pursuing it any further, but You never know, man. You never know. There's still time. There's still time.
Yeah, we're younger than DDP was when he started.
Hey, man. So.
He's doing just fine.
Well, we didn't quite make it there, and somehow the great Kali did. Man, life is not fair.
No.
Lifelong fans didn't cut it, but the great Kali makes it to the main event here. Not quite the main event yet, but he will quite soon. As we take it to Judgment Day 2006, May 21st, 2006, from the U.S. Airways Center in Phoenix, Arizona. And, man, I guess I was just all in on wrestling at this point, thinking about becoming a wrestler, because for some reason, I bought the show on DVD out of all the random shows we've seen and haven't seen here. I don't know why I got this one, except for the fact it had one match I really wanted to see on there, and that was Chris Benoit and Fit Finlay, dude.
This is like a 20-minute barn burner, man.
You talk about all the crap on SmackDown during this time. The one bright spot was friggin' Finlay, of all people, making a comeback in 2006. That just blew my mind.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it? Again, it relying on the old guys, though.
Yeah.
Like, calling in the old guard to make the show worth watching. So, it's weird.
He was awesome during this time.
This version of Finlay is like 2 years later when Jericho has his, like, career revival, like, with his character. Or even, like, in 2016 when Jericho's career kind of rejuvenated with the Kevin Owens story. So Finlay was 10 years ahead of that when his comeback here on SmackDown.
Came out of nowhere.
I know. It's awesome. But, yeah, I can't remember. I think I watched this DVD with you at some point once you bought it, but I don't remember this match at all because I'm sure that we skipped it. Or I'm sure that I did not choose to watch it. But I do remember watching Finlay and Benoit, though, because that was fantastic. Because, again, I used to watch those guys on Dokes every Saturday night all the time. So.
Right. And do you remember the theme song for this pay-per-view?
I do. I remember it was Randy Orton's theme for one night back in March of this year.
That's right.
So it's also going to go on to become the theme song of somebody else who's going to debut in a couple of months. Somebody else who recently kind of dipped their toe back in WWE waters here last week on WWE Backstage, and that's this Fire Burns by Killswitch Engage, which we know is CM Punk's original theme song. So how about that?
Yeah, it's pretty funny to hear that going back and watching this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I forgot it was the theme song for the. I remember it was Randy Orton's music for like one night.
Yeah,
and then obviously it's Punk's music, but I forgot it was this pay per view. So.
And this pay-per-view also famously is going to give us the birth of a character we'll talk about here later on. All hail King Booker.
Exactly. And talk about another career resurgence, just lighting up SmackDown, like making it actually worth watching. I was all in for King Booker. So.
Oh, yeah.
All about it. So, and we'll get to talk about him as we get into a show we actually attended with him on it. So.
That's right.
But anyway. Yeah, this setup looks like it's at Epcot or something, man. It's got this, I have no idea why it looked like that, but it has nothing to do with Judgment Day. But anyway, we got Taz and Cole on commentary, and this match is second from the top, just under the World Heavyweight title match. Honestly, I'm surprised it's not above that, because Ray was just such a joke at this point.
True.
You know? We see Kali and Daivari walking, or quote-unquote walking, backstage, whatever Kali does.
Dragging his feet.
Yeah. But I will put some positive spin on it, because they do a really good job with the way they shoot him, is they're shooting from the bottom, kind of like they used to when Taker first debuted, you know, when he would walk out, they'd shoot him from way below so he looks larger than life. So I give him that, I guess. Smart production, but you can't hide what happens when the bell rings, you know, so at all.
Nope, yep, as Bruce Pritchard said, and then the bell rang here.
Exactly.
As The Kali and Daivari, they're making their entrance, and they just eagerly await the Undertaker in the ring. And the crowd eagerly awaits Undertaker, too, as he makes his first appearance since the SmackDown after WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm. You know,
it's interesting. A lot of times, even when he's off TV, he'll do voiceover or have something on the screen or play some mind games with somebody. But he didn't do that here.
Mm-mm.
With Kali. I guess they're kind of selling, again, that Kali has really taken out his spirit and everything, because he's not hadn't done those mind games, but he's just, you know, texting with Teddy backstage.
Oh, that's a great show.
But he does get a heck of a pop as he comes out.
Oh, man.
And emerges. The crowd is ready to see him.
Oh, yeah. It's great, man. And again, we haven't really mentioned this in a while, but he's going to get that second pop. The one when he comes and then the one when he actually appears, you know. And it's just, I can't put over how big that reception is, man. And, yeah, just he's been gone forever. And so this is really great to see him back. And Phoenix was ready. And he gets his huge pyro and his huge torches light on fire for his entrance. You know, he always gets his really cool entrances at these pay-per-views. So, I don't know. It's just, he's the only one that ever gets that kind of cool stuff back then. So, really like it. And he walks through the smoke, kind of eyeing Great Khali. Would it be like the Eye of a Tiger, I guess? Like, Khali's theme song.
The and
his
Tiger.
His visuals for his Titantron video or whatever. So.
Well, you know, Taker's got to get prepared for looking in the Eye of the Tiger. He's going to get undressed here and get into business time. And it's a very short business time here. I've got the shortest notes I think I've ever had for a match mm-hmm. right here. As Undertaker, he jumps right in it. He starts throwing hands with Khali, but Khali is just going to toss him right out of the ring. And Undertaker's got to take a breather on the outside and kind of reassess things here as he's facing a monster like he's never faced before.
Yeah, he slides back in and kicks him, punches him. And this is about the extent of the wrestling we're going to see. Honestly, it's like two guys who've never played a wrestling video game learning how to play.
You know, don't know how to grapple.
They don't know how to grapple or anything, yeah. It's like setting two, like your wives down for play a wrestling game. Like, that's how, this is the magic you're going to get. Basically, so. There's Irish Whip gets reversed, and Khali throws Taker over the top rope again. And Taker gets up on the apron and hits an apron stunner to Khali. So I guess there's one move right there. Ducks a couple clotheslines and hits some more punches into Khali and then kicks him again. And then he's going to go for old school.
He does. And is he going to hit old school?
Negative, Ghost Rider. It's the first time.
It's the first time. Of course not. Khali throws Taker off the top rope and gets a lot of heel heat from that. And... you know, mm-hmm. it makes sense, man. That's a good way. It's simple, basic storytelling here. But the Giant's gonna get heel heat on Undertaker by not letting him hit that signature move. Khali hits some punches in the corner, hits a clothesline, and just kind of like he did with Mark Henry, Undertaker's bumping all over the place trying to get this guy over.
Yeah, he's a pro here, man. Just trying his hardest, and you know. All these spots are him just saying, what can I do? What can we do psychology-wise to make sure this guy gets over? So outside, they're back and forth, just kind of punching, and then Taker gets thrown into the steps knee first, like we were, you know, apt to see him do, and Khali's posing and kind of distracting the referee while Khali's abusing the English language, and Daivari winds up kicking Taker on the outside, so... And then they're both back in the ring, and Khali actually does hit a body slam. It was ugly, but he hits a body slam.
He does, man. I can't believe Undertaker's taken those types of moves from this guy. Just very...
I know.
Even if you didn't know he killed a guy, it's just sloppy and dangerous and ugly looking here. But Khali's signaling for that big chop. He's holding his hand. He's going to go for it, but Taker sits up, and then Khali chops him down and goes for that signature one-foot pin, but Taker's going to kick out at two here.
Yeah, which honestly, I was kind of surprised. I thought that'd be the end, you know? And Taker sits up, and they get back and forth with a few punches, and then Taker... can't take the big man down, so he actually does a jumping headbutt, which is weird to see Taker do.
Yeah.
And he goes for old school, and he's going to hit it this time, because, you know, it's first time he never hits it, second time he always hits it. So, but that will not take Khali down.
No, he stays on his feet. He ain't bumping in this match.
No.
They start throwing hands, trading punches with each other. The crowd's trying to get into it. They're chanting for Undertaker, and... just shows you how much they appreciate him. They're still willing to get behind him in a match this
right.
crappy opponent.
And that's
crappy.
What I was surprised most about in this whole match is how invested the crowd was in it because of how sucky the match is and how sucky Khali is. Because there's just so much equity built in with Taker's character and everything that he's the only guy you could have done this with.
they would have got the crowd as invested as they are here. So.
Exactly. Just we compared Kali to Andre the Giant earlier, and he's going to continue those comparisons here as he does signature Andre spot, where this is as close as he's going to get to taking a bump in this match. Undertaker goes for a big diving clothesline, and it sends Kali into the ropes, and he falls backwards, gets his arms tied up in the Andre the Giant style.
Oh, yeah, and the crowd loves that because they know what that means. As Taker's, it's fair game for him to just wail away on him, so he's punching him, and the crowd's actually counting each punch he has, you know, which is kind of fun little spot to see. And Daivari gets up on the apron, and Taker just goes to choke slam him from the outside, but Charles Robinson, for some reason, doesn't want to see that, so he stops that, and Daivari's able to help Kali get loose, and Kali goes to chop Taker and misses, and Taker's going to try a choke slam, which is going to be reversed into a big boot from the great Kali.
Kali hits a big boot. Undertaker sits up again, and Kali chops him in the skull again. Undertaker's all wobbly and woozy, selling this big time. Tries to sit up one more time, and Kali just kind of kicks him back down again, puts his foot on the Undertaker, and pins him right there in the middle of the ring with one foot in an enormous upset here at 8 minutes and 30 seconds. And just his third match on the main roster, the great Kali basically squashes the Undertaker in... We kind of made fun of them for saying this earlier, but maybe a way we've never seen before in 16 years.
Sure. Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah, that's a hype. I mean, it's a they beat that statement to the ground, you know, with every single feud he's in saying that. But this is legitimately the one time you could use that.
Yeah, like no one's ever beatdowns, even Kane hasn't. Not in a match, not like
right.
actually pinned him like this.
Yeah, because the closest you should have ever got with that would have been Kane when he first came in, but he didn't even get that kind of, you know, one-up on him. So, but dude, do you think that the ending was supposed to be that chop? Because to me, it looked like he just stalled too long, and then Taker kind of sat up like, this is taking way too long. And then Kali just kicked him down again and pinned him, because that kick was so weak-looking, man. And they hadn't established that as like a finisher. They'd established the chop as the move to be afraid of, you know?
It was definitely a little awkward. Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't look right.
But anyway, like you said, man, he pins him clean, essentially. You know, I mean, there was no chair shot, no belt shot, no thumbtacks, you know, no mousetraps, anything like that. So, yeah, pins Undertaker in, like you said, pretty much the most one-sided squash we've ever seen with him, so I hope Taker got some good payday from this.
Yeah, I mean, what do you even make of this? Like, what?
I remember reading the recap. Obviously, I saw a DVD, whatever, 2 months later after it came out with you, but I can't recall this particular match itself, but I remember reading the recaps of this and just being blown away at how just this can't happen to Undertaker. Like, you know, he must be all in on this guy. Well, I don't know what the deal is, man, but like, you can tell that they had big plans for the great Kali. If you're going to go, you have 3 matches. You beat Funaki, the world champion, in 2 minutes, and then you beat the Undertaker. You're 3-0. You know, that's pretty, that says a lot about what they think of you.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of we pick on WWE for not pushing guys hard enough, and then they do pick somebody to push hard enough, but unfortunately it's this guy
that right they pick. Exactly,
like that's the problem with all this, is it's kind of crazy booking, and you're pushing this guy to the moon, but again it's just not the right guy.
Right,
but I mean, kudos to them for trying, but this is just a dark day in the Undertaker's timeline. When you look back at it, it's not a match.
It is.
Anyone should go back and watch. Just forget it. Let's pretend it never happened. Let's erase it from there. It will show you about as big of a beatdown Undertaker will ever get. So I guess for historical purposes, it's, you know, for a curiosity, you could go look at that.
But Brock Lesnar never handled him like this.
No, really, no.
And that's probably
pretty
his
much
most
no one ever did.
Formidable physical opponent was Brock Lesnar, and he never handled him like this. So, yeah, I mean, it definitely. You know what? Some things in wrestling, when you're actually surprised, when you can be shocked, it's really you remember those times for good or bad. So I do remember this for bad, though, being like right. bombed. That take, but like I do remember genuinely being shocked that he won clean. You know what I'm saying?
It made I mean, it's great a good Kali, thing. You know, yeah. like he was immediately as somebody you had to take seriously.
Sure. Sure. So, but that being said, he still sucks and he butchers the English language and he's, I can't wait to be done talking about him, but we got so much more Kali to cover here on Talking Taker. So.
Well, he's going to butcher the plans for our next pay-per-view as we keep this, podcast rolling onto the last ride as we're supposed to talk about the rematch between the great Kali and the Undertaker in the Great Khali's signature match for the first time on American soil, the dreaded Punjabi prison match. But plans are going to change, pal. And drug tests are going to be failed, pal. And instead, going to talk about, in the Great Khali's signature match, The Undertaker versus The Big Show.
ECW World Champion. The Big Show.
Oh, so many things are going to change. Talk about plans changing. Big Show, ECW Champion. Another example of that. Yeah. And
so many things in that sentence don't make sense. ECW World Champion, Big Show versus The Undertaker in Punjabi prison match.
Dude, 2006 is pretty weird.
It's wacky.
I thought maybe 01 or 02, those got a lot of craziness in those years, but 2006 might give it a run for its money right there. And we'll get to that next week. We can't wait to hear your thoughts and talk about that. So much meat on the bone to talk about next week. But we want to hear your thoughts about this week's episode. We want to hear what you thought about the Great Khali's debut. Tell us what you thought about our stories in wrestling school. Give us all your feedback as well. We've already got quite a bit of feedback from you guys when we posted this on the Twitter and the rest of the social media. You know, it's funny how the bad matches get that sometimes even more than the good ones do. Let's see here. Over on Instagram, I posted about it, and at Larkin_92, that's our buddy Mike Larkin, who has been a listener and supporter of the show, and he's also got his own podcast as well. He said, I feel you guys' pain watching it as a 14-year-old and now back as a 27-year-old. Put me out of my misery. I remember Daivari saying, you will worship the great Khali. How about no?
Exactly.
He said, love the longest yard, though.
There you go. Big Burt Reynolds fan.
Hey, man. Longest Yard was good. I enjoyed it.
It was fun.
Not my favorite Sandman movie, but it was
no.
fun.
Austin with a mustache was great, though.
It was great. At TPK James on Twitter, Mr. James said, won't lie, this had me shook. I also think this was the last year I believed in kayfabe.
Oh, man.
14 years was a good run. I need to know more information about that, Mr. James.
Is it just because of this?
That's it. This ruined it, man.
This is successfully killed kayfabe for him right here.
At Keegan Spectator, Keegan Demetra,
sorry, Kali.
Yeah, I'd love to hear him say your name, Keegan. He said, I did like these guys' last man standing match on SmackDown, though. So we'll get to that. We'll see how that holds up here in a few weeks. Yeah, we still got to do it. At TEH_JB, Jason Bayless said, you know, it did what it was supposed to do. It gave us the shock factor. Like, if he's pinning Undertaker with a foot on his chest, what else can he do to everyone else? Which I respect that. You know, we kind of said that a little bit.
That's true.
Randy Turco brought his input. Said, I remember not hearing his name correctly, thinking his name was the Great Colleen.
Oh, yes. Great Colleen.
He also thought Stone Cold's finisher was the Stone Cold Stutter at first blush as well.
Oh, Randall. The Stone Cold Stutter.
Check your ears, bud.
The Great Khali.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Poor guy. Poor guy's about to have his hopes dashed with those Minnesota Golden Gophers, too, man. It's, enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah, man. Ride that wave while you can.
And at the Melting Pat, Pat Johnston said, I enjoyed Kali's debut when he stared down Undertaker and chopped him. Don't remember enjoying anything after that, but he did love that chop, though. You did
perfect.
Not. You did not love that chop.
It was perfect. There you go. That's the worst finishing move. Golly, I hated the chop, dude. It just doesn't look like it does anything.
It's nothing. Yeah. Yeah. I prefer the Iron Claw or the Cranium Crunch. So yes, give me that.
Or do the Umaga, like, thumb spike
Samoan
thing.
Samoan spike.
Or just even, like, slap them across the face so hard that it knocks them out. But, like, you just chop them with the side of your hand on the top of their head, like... I don't know, man. It just sucks.
And lastly, let me shout out Michael91080 on Instagram. He said he was there live for WrestleMania 22.
Oh, yeah.
Michael, if you're listening, give us some more feedback, man. Tell us some more about what it was all about, what your experience was like there. We love hearing from people who were at the show. So hit us up with that info if you're listening out there. And... of course, go check out our buddies at the Bottom Line Wrestling Podcast. If you didn't listen to our watch-along episode a couple weeks ago, go check that out. And they're continuing to talk about 1999 and the career of Stone Cold Steve Austin and that end of an era match with The Undertaker. And we've got the shirts on sale over at tpublic.com. Black Friday's coming up. You know, you got to... pick some Christmas presents out, so go pick something out for your Undertaker fan in your life. And don't forget to subscribe and rate the show and go get your 30-day free trial of Stitcher Premium to listen to this podcast and every podcast ad-free over there. Just put in the code TALKINGTAKER when you subscribe for 30 free days. And join us next week as we take you to the Great American Bash 2006.
Absolutely. And if you were there at the U.S. Airways Center in Phoenix, Arizona for Judgment Day, let us know. Let us know what you thought. Did it suck the air out of the arena, you know, when Taker was pinned, like you said, literally with a foot on his chest, like not even covered like a real, you know, wrestler. Just, I mean, that shows how, quote unquote, dominant this guy was. We all really know, like, real life, he just can't bend down and pin you. But whatever, you know, we get it. Did it suck the wind out of there? Was it shocking? Did you make the eyeballs like the guy did when Taker got pinned at Mania by Brock Lesnar?
Right.
You know, did you make those eyeballs there? Would have been great to have had, like, gifts from back then, you know, in 2006 and stuff. Be great. But anyway, let us know what you thought, what your experience was there. And, other than that, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you next week for quite a strange tale. As we tell this tale of The Undertaker over the years. And other than that, ladies and gentlemen, take her easy.
May 19th. That was the date when my mother and adopted family were killed in a fire. And I've fought my whole life to suppress those memories, those demons. But now, May 19th has come and gone. And I have a new movie out in which I kill lots of people in unique and excruciating fashion. And tonight, I have a match in which I plan to inflict insufferable pain and punishment upon my opponent. If you want to know the truth, I've never